Hey guys, I'm really excited to share this interview with you, but before we do, I wanted to let you know that we have partnered with Ambrosian Candles to offer the first 50 $10 or more a month patrons two free tapered 10-inch prayer candles. Dave and I talk about on the Catholic Man Show, we talk all the time about the importance of prayer with family. We also mention how having candles while praying helps set the mood and the ambiance. It helps us enter into being in the presence of our Lord. It also gives children a job during prayer time, causing them to kind of take ownership in prayer. And it separates prayer time from the daily activities that we encounter throughout the day. So that's why we partner with Ambrosian Candles. They are 100% beeswax, meaning that they're all natural. They burn longer and brighter. They're made by a great Catholic family. You can check them out by going to ambrosiancandles.com. But if you want two free ones, visit patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. The first 50 patrons to sign up for $10 or more a month, we're going to send you two free candles on top of all the other benefits that we normally send out. We don't talk about this enough, but we have over 60 different recordings available to all of our patrons. Most of them are audiobooks, professional audiobooks that we've done. Some of them are interviews. Some of them are courses that we've given. One of them is a course that we did with Pat Flynn on being able to stay healthy and fit, the virtue of fitness. And then we also have a course with Carlo Broussard on the five proofs of the existence of God with Thomas Aquinas. We also have a commentary on Aquinas and the Eucharist. So go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. The first 50 people to sign up, $10 more a month, will receive two free taper 10-inch prayer candles, 100% beeswax by Ambrosian Candles. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. Now, on to Jeff Cavins.
That could also be it.
I mean, sometimes that happens.
So Jeff.
We're here with Jeff Cavins.
That wasn't recorded, was it?
this is Jeff Cavins.
Jeff Cavins is with us this evening. And, Jeff, a lot of people don't know, but you worked at a radio station for several years.
I did.
Correct?
I did.
And it was a classic rock radio station, is that correct?
One of them was.
Yeah?
Yep. I was in I started off going to broadcasting school in Minneapolis, and I ended up working in Minneapolis at WCCO, a 50,000-watt clear channel station, Peabody nice. Winner every year, really an incredible thing. And I was fortunate enough to be working there, so I was coached by some of these amazing announcers that were known worldwide. They were really good guys. And they'd take me out to lunch, and they would teach me. And then they went on strike that year, and I got a call at about 11 at night from the general manager, and I'm 21 years old. But I'm the only one with a first-class license. Back then, you had to have a license if you wanted to run the place. So first-class license was for television, second, radio. No, first-class anybody could get. Second was radio. Third was, no, it's the other way.
The other way around?
Yeah, but anyway, I had them all. Uh-huh. And so he calls me up and said, you're the only one with the license. You got to come in and run the station. And I said, but you're on strike. He said, you got to come in. I thought, oh, boy. So I called a couple of the announcers, and they said, do it. You're young. Nobody cares. Do it. It's good experience. So I went in there, and I was running this station that I wanted to work at when I grew up. I was running it. And then I ended up at Valley City, North Dakota, which was a country station, but at nighttime it was rock, and that was me from 7 to midnight.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you saw a lot that happened in the radio, because radio stations back in the day, for those who are, you know, maybe not privy to what radio stations used to be, but they used to have a lot of the bands actually come into the radio stations. I mean, there was a lot of like activity in the radio station. It wasn't just like here's a little booth or here's like like a little home office.
Yeah, you were just playing internet tracks.
Right. Yeah.
You could bring people in and you could do theater, you know, theater of the mind, you know, with bringing people in do that, or you could have a cast of people running a show. And it was also back then, I miss it, to be honest with you, because it was personality radio.
Right.
You tuned in not because it was just KDWB radio or whatever. That announcer is the one that you wanted to listen when they were playing Stacks of Wax.
Yeah.
So it was personality radio, talk radio. I was a weird kid growing up that my parents gave me a transistor radio, a little one.
Yeah.
And I would sit and listen to people like Larry King on radio.
How about Paul Harvey?
Paul Harvey I'd listen to. I listened to all the talk shows in the middle of the night, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a talk show host. And then the Lord interrupted all that.
So is that what you went to school for, to be into radio broadcasting?
Radio and TV, yeah.
Awesome.
But,
yep.
But it prepared you for, you know, you were the founder of Life on the Rock.
Like yeah, and so. I was in Christian radio. I left Valley City, North Dakota, and took a job as program director in Iowa, Pella, Iowa, at a Christian station. And then I left there and went to Florida, and I studied again, and now I was ordained a Protestant pastor. So
when you made it to EWTN and you were host of Life on the Rock and got that off the ground, what was it like working with Mother Angela? Because everybody loves to hear her little sound bites and little quips, and like you read, her biography from Raymond Arroyo, and you know,
or listen to it. You should listen to it.
Yeah, the audiobook is
one of the few books. Like, don't read it.
Just
listen to it.
Yeah. So you get a sense of like. Her quip, like being very quip, a little sassy, a little bit, you know, like very focused on being a contemplative in her vocation. What was your experience like with her?
Well, I was kind of like a son to her. She looked at me, I think, a little bit differently in that there was a connection there between us from the moment we met. You know, I remember when I was invited to come on her live show. I think it was Wednesday night live show. And we were talking about my testimony, and she was laughing, and we were really getting along well. And she asked me in the middle of the show, first show, she said, would you pray about doing a 13-week show for us? She goes, honey, the people need to hear this, you know? And I said, I went like this. I bowed my head down like I was praying, and then went up again, looked at her and said, yes. Yes, I pray about it. And she goes, ah. And so that ended up becoming Our Father's Plan, which Scott Hahn and I did, which was the longest running series of all time there. And the reason I asked Scott to do it with
just
me.
Just a guy named Scott Hahn.
No one knew who I was. I wasn't on the air at that point.
Uh-huh.
This was before Life on the Rock. So nobody knew who I was. Let's listen to Jeff. But they knew Scott. So I asked him if he'd do it with me, and we did 13 one-hour shows. Well, anyway, on that show where she interviewed me, as we're walking off the set, she grabs me by the arm, and she kind of gets my head down by her, and she said, would you pray about moving here and starting your own show? She said, the Lord just spoke to me and said, you're the one. He said, I've been praying about this for years, and you're the one. And I went, wow. I just came here for an interview.
Also, honey, would you pray about giving me $1 million?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I will pray about
just
that.
Just go and pray about that.
Yeah, the answer is no. So I told her, I said, let me pray about that, and I'll get back to you. And so I prayed for a month and a half with a bishop. Bishop Paul Dudley in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I said, yeah. And so we left Steubenville, where I was teaching scripture, moved down to Alabama, which is like a culture shock, you know.
Totally,
it is,
yeah.
For a Minnesota guy. It's really a different world. And the first time we got down there, went to a barbecue place, and the waitress comes over to my wife and me, and she comes over and says, how are you, darling? And my wife looks at her like, what? You know, how are you, sweetheart?
About to get it back in.
Yeah. Like, are you hitting on my husband?
Yeah, first day here. And so it was funny. But in working with her, I started off, I did Life on the Rock. I developed that show. She liked it. And then 6 months later, she calls me into her office, which usually isn't good. You know, I mean, people don't get in there and say, she doesn't just call you and say, you're doing marvelous. So she called me in there, and I sat down waiting for her in this very same office that she was eventually healed in, very office. And I'm sitting there at that table waiting for her, kind of nervous. And she comes walking in, clang, clang, with all of her braces and everything. And she sits down, and I said, so what are we talking about? And she said, well, I'll tell you. And she told me, she said, I wanted to know if when I'm sick or I'm not feeling well, she said, I'd like you to do the show for me, honey. And I'm like, what? And she said, you know, sometimes I'm under the weather, and we'll do it together, but you lead the show. And I'm like blown away his mother Angelica asking me, this 37-year-old guy that just showed up, to be her sub. I said, well, I'd be honored to, but I got to ask you, why me? Because you guys know as well, and many of your listeners know, she could pick anybody she wants.
Of course.
Totally. Yeah.
Mother Angelica substitute or do the show with her.
Even the bishops who hated her would have totally come in and subbed for her show.
You've got five letters. Why not me?
Yeah.
Well, so I said, why me? And she answered, and it really surprised me. But in hindsight, it doesn't surprise me. She said, well, I'll tell you. And her answer was twofold. She said, I know you're thoroughly Catholic, but you sound like a Protestant. And she liked it. She liked that sound. She liked the pure communication of, I didn't sound flowery, or I didn't use a lot of meta language, you know, and all that. She just liked it. You just talk about Jesus, you know. And she did that, you know, quite a bit. People usually ask me about Mother Angelica. What's she really like? You know, because I've traveled with her. We've done stuff around the country.
Was she different than what everybody else saw?
No, not even the slightest.
Say, like, doesn't everybody know what she was
not
really like?
Not even the slightest.
Yeah.
If you saw a show with Mother Angelica on it, if you were going to have dinner with her, it's the same lady. Exactly the same lady. She didn't put on a persona at all. And just happens to be the cameras going. You know? That's the way she was. And she, I got a lot of funny stories. But she would, she's an example of how God can use someone with no apparent talent for a given area like broadcasting. And he can use them and become the largest religious broadcasting outfit in the world. And that's what she did, you know. She told me one time, she said that she worked in high school. She said, I worked hard for my F's.
I worked hard for my F's.
And her parents were the only parents divorced.
Oh, yeah.
And she had this injury and nothing going for her.
And the stomach thing that was happening to her.
She gave everything she had to the Lord. And the Lord did incredible, incredible things, you know, with it. But, we've had some good travels, and one time we were in California together at a conference with Ignatius, the founder of Ignatius, my mind's blank.
Fessio?
Yes, Fessio, sorry. Father Fessio, and then we had a couple of other people. Anyway, I'm done. I'm the last speaker. I'm tired. It's California. I'm going to go up to my room. I'm just like flop on the bed. I'm so tired. Phone rings. It's Mother. What are you doing, honey? And I'm like, nothing. Come on up here. It said, me and the sisters and some others were having a party. She said, we got Domino's, pizza, and wings.
I was going to say, like, what does that even mean?
Domino's, you know? Pizza, and wings. That's the party.
Getting wild up here.
Yeah, and said, we'll have fun talking about the Lord. You know, okay.
Sister Constance, she's having a second piece of pizza. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I'll get up there. I'll stop her. This is not right. So, yeah, I went up there, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful time. And those are the types of memories I have of her. And then, of course, the night she was healed, Father...
were you around, like, at that time? I mean, on that day?
I was down half a mile from
there.
That's
right, because you lived there at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I was supposed to meet a priest for dinner that night. And he didn't show up. I didn't know what happened to him. So I went back home, and about 9:30 at night, I get this phone call. And the priest said, did you hear? You probably know who the priest is. Did you hear about Mother? Did you hear about Mother? And I said, no, what? She's healed. I said, healed of what? She was healed. She doesn't have the braces on anymore, you know? And I said, you're kidding. He said, no. And so that's where he was. He was there. And so the next morning at about 6 in the morning, Mother calls me. And she said, honey, come on down to the monastery. I'm going to show you something. So I went down there, and she's behind the bars with the other nuns, which was funny because I was normally just with her wherever she was. But that day, the bars. And she walks in there with the sisters, and she doesn't have any crutches or anything, and she does a twirl. She's twirling. And I'm like, wow. She goes, what do you think? And I said, I'm blown away. Now, the priest that night before was Father Carapi, okay? And so that night, that next night was very, very interesting because when I went there in the morning, she showed me this miracle. And then she asks me, she says, honey, do you think I could come on your show tonight and tell the world? And I said, Mother, you kind of own the network.
Yeah. Am I? Can I stop you?
Of course you can come on my show and do this. So
the show that you gave me on your network.
And yeah, you know? It made me who I am. Yeah. No, can we do it another night?
Yeah. Tonight's not good for me.
Yeah. So yeah, just not into it.
Yeah.
So she, that night I introduced the show. I always introduce the show with a teaser, you know. Tonight, we'll be talking about that next on Life on the Rock, and then it goes into the commercial. So that night, I had her braces in my hands, and I said, one of the sisters has been wearing these braces for 50 years or whatever, and she's not wearing them anymore. We'll find out why next. Of course, by this time, word had spread all over the world. And so the phones just lit up and jammed the system. They'd never had that many phone calls before, and she walks onto my set for the show. She walks onto my set, and we talk to each other. She's telling me all about what happened, and I'm thinking, man, this is historic. And she's telling it on this my show, and she told the whole story. And then in the middle of the interview, now, I'm not a dancer. I am a dancer when I'm alone.
Everybody is.
I'm really good alone, but
trust me.
But with other people around, something happens to me. I lose it.
It's humility.
I didn't want to say it,
but then it would actually be humility.
And I'd prefer we not talk about that again.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't want the Latin community to lose their reputation as, you know, like being the best dancers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in the middle of the interview, she's sitting at the Life on the Rock, you know, the coffee shop, and she reaches over and she grabs my hand and goes, honey, let's dance. And I'm like, I'm live all around the world, and I'm not a dancer. And here's a nun asking me to dance, and of all people, Mother Angelica.
Right.
She goes, honey, let's dance. And I'm like, okay.
And so also, it's like, wait, Mother Angelica, do I lead, or are you going to lead? Like,
or does Jesus lead?
Right, exactly. Maybe what happens next?
The Holy Spirit's leading. I'm out of here. And so I said, okay. And so we got up and we're dancing live on, I think I was dancing. I know I was moving, but some people would have called it dancing, I guess. Others, you know, get a paramedic. He's hurt. But it's like when I was a kid growing up, you know, I had a hard time swimming because every time I swam, they called the paramedics. But when I was dancing with her, I realized this was a historical moment. She was healed. And she said to me about 6 months after that one time, she said, you know, she said, in some ways I miss the braces and the pain. And I said, why? And she said, because I had something to offer Jesus every single day as far as health. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's an interesting perspective, mm-hmm. you know.
When I hear people say that, it's like, you know what, I have a long way to go.
Yeah. So and then I was with her when she had her stroke. I went to the hospital and I spoke to her and she answered me with blinks of the eye. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was special.
You know, I saw the Cabrini movie last night.
I saw it 3 nights ago.
And I couldn't help but notice the similarities between Cabrini and Mother Angelica.
Yes, on my podcast. I did a podcast on it yesterday. And a review, I guess you could say, and I drew the same conclusion. I said, I see Mother Angelica in this lady, a lady who will not take no.
I mean, and it wasn't just like, oh, they're both women who became successful. No, they both had opposition from leadership in the church, physical ailments that they had to overcome. No, like both had the same attitude of like, oh, forget, no, we don't have the money, but like, so what, you know, and it was just striking.
Yeah.
All of the
similarities. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I can't help but believe that Frances Cabrini had an impact on Mother Angelica. I know she did on Mother Teresa. Mm. Mother Teresa said it.
Uh-huh.
She said that was her role model.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because Mother Angelica would have had, she would have had to have seen a lot of the similarities herself.
I think so.
Just, especially once she had built EWTN and a lot of those successes had been realized.
Yeah, and Mother was a very sweet, sweet lady. But when she locked into what she wanted to do, you better get out of the way. It's going to be done. And I think for the book that Arroyo wrote about Mother, I think one of the things I shared was, I don't know if you put it in there, but was that one of the secrets to her success was that when she was going to do something and she suddenly realized this isn't going to happen, she cut bait and went on. She didn't have any problem saying, that didn't work, let's move on, rather than being stubborn, or saying,
trying to fit it, yeah.
She had that kind of humility. But you don't want to get on her bad side,
No.
And her bad side wasn't an evil side. Her bad side was one of what Jesus and I are doing, you're getting in the way.
Yeah, it was just the losing side, mm-hmm. being on her bad side. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think that she would be, this may be a loaded question, but do you think that she would be as successful today if let's say we transport her, because podcasts are huge now, right? When she came on, getting her show on to cable network and to get satellite and all the things that made her kind of get in front of people. What if we took that and then imported it in today's world with podcasts? Do you think she'd be as successful today as what she was back then?
That's a good question. I think that a young Mother Angelica coming into what we have today with media and all that, I think she would have. I think she would have adapted to that and said, well, how do I do that? How she ended up with television was she went on the 700 Club mm-hmm. with Pat Robertson.
Right.
And she looked around at all the equipment and she said to herself, I could use one of these.
Yeah, ooh, I want that.
Yeah, she's like, I could use this. And so it started as a local show, then went to a cable show, then it went to this huge worldwide thing. But she's an example of feeding 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fish.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
She gave Jesus what she had, and he did extraordinary things with it. She didn't know anything about broadcasting.
Yeah, it seems like she would have been successful.
I think she would have.
Because she was doing what she was told to do.
She was a pioneer in her day.
Yeah.
Right, and the Lord called her to this, and she said yes.
Yeah.
And was faithful to that yes.
I think she would have been known as the nun with the YouTube channel.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Or the podcast.
Well, just even her style, right? The way her cadence, the way she did things, how raw and emotional she could get, but then how also she was not ambiguous. She was she cared about your soul. You knew she was talking, she was talking to everybody, but when she was talking and she looked in that camera, you thought, she's just talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
That style and the way that you can do that is not something that a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you could, it takes a long time to work on that, and it was kind of a natural thing for her.
Yeah, yeah. And she wasn't impressed with success. She wasn't impressed with positions and success, which is something that she had in common with Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Mother Teresa, Father Groeschel told me one time, I shouldn't have said that. Pope John Paul said, don't be a name dropper to me. I shouldn't. Anyway.
We'll edit it out.
Blew that one again. Yeah,
that private dinner I had with Pope John Paul, he said,
I can't believe I said that. No, but Father Groeschel said that that Mother Teresa was so focused that he said he's had over 200 fights with her, and he said, I've lost all 200, arguments. He didn't say fights, but arguments. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is with Mother Angelica, too, is that she really knew what she wanted to do. She really knew what she wanted to do. And she had that tenacity and fortitude as a younger nun to see what was available out there and put the two together, and that is equipment. Not equipment plus me is going to be a success. Equipment plus Jesus I think we can do something here. So yeah. her idea was more of finding equipment for Jesus.
Yeah.
Than for herself.
Yeah, she even said, like, she would look, when she looked up there and, like, looking at all the TV stuff, she was like, well, how much does all this cost? So we said, oh, it's like $1 million.
Nothing. That means nothing.
And she goes, you mean to tell me all I have to do is raise $1 million and I get to reach all these people and tell them about Jesus? Like, that's all I got to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a mind frame. Like, yeah. I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so my question about Mother Angelica would be, what is it that, like, just the average person can take away and, like, apply? What about her life, her success, you know, her mission, fortitude, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
How can I apply that to what lesson should I learn mm-hmm. in my own life from yeah. her?
I would say that the answer to that is that it was her love for Jesus. She had a love for Jesus, to be with Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. She spoke about Jesus in a very personal, intimate way. And it was almost like she was in continual contact with Jesus throughout her day. And I think that was the anchor of her life. She didn't leave Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament and then go out and do her thing and then come back to Jesus. He was with her all of the time. And I think that the average layman can live that way too, where they're continually in touch with the Lord. And whatever they're going to do, Jesus is with them. And he has something for them to do. So one of her strengths was that she was always trying to listen to the voice of Jesus in what Jesus was telling her to do through every day. And I think that that would be something that all laity could take into their life too, is that when I get up in the morning and then I head out, Jesus is with me here, or I'm with him.
You know, that is something that I have found just in my own experience, my own life, very challenging to do, not from a lack of desire. I, you know, like, earnestly want to be that guy, you know, to, as I reflect on at the end of my day, as I reflect on it, I find myself going like, yeah, I was just getting caught up in the things I'm doing and
yeah.
just forgetting. And I have not yet found something to help me.
Yeah.
Other than just continuing to fail at it and, like, hoping that one day I get better at it.
When I'm with him, I typically hit him. But yeah. That helps.
You know, but do you have any advice for me on how to be more conscious?
Yeah. Well, I wrote in the book I wrote on how to be an activated disciple, you know, how to live this life where you're with him constantly 24/7. To back up a little bit, my prayer about 20 years ago was that. And I said, Lord, I can study your word all day. I can teach people your word all day. I can do an interview, whatever. But to not lose sight of you all day long is really what I want. I want to be able to get up and then go with you throughout the day and go in and out constantly of Jesus is with me. And so I wrote about that in the book and how to do what you're asking. And one of those things I mentioned in there was, and it sounds funny, but it's true. Act like he's real. Now, when I say that to people, act like he's real, they're going to say, well, he is. And I go, with a wink, I know. But act like it. And then, well, what do you mean? I don't mean anything. Just act like he's real. And so how do you act like I'm real? Well, you're both looking at me right now. You're talking to me right now. You're treating me like I'm real, you know? You're not looking away from me and talking meta language about it. If we were to talk to Jeff, you know, you're talking to me. You're treating me like I'm real. Treat Jesus like he's real. Talk to him. Not everything has to be in the headspace, you know? You're driving in the car, talk to him out loud. People say, oh, out loud. Okay, you don't believe. All right, I get it. You don't think he's real. Well, no, I think he's real, but he kind of reads my thoughts. Well, you're not talking out loud for him. Yeah, he knows him, your thoughts. You're talking out loud for you. Treat him like a relationship. Mm-hmm. Treat him like he's real. Talk to him. Cry to him. You know, work it out. And when you're going down the hall and you think, should I talk to that guy over there? Say it out loud to yourself. Lord, you want me to talk to that guy over there? Act like the relationship is real. I found that made a huge, huge difference. One of the other things that I did was
that's because it's like helping you form natural habits.
Yeah.
You know, part of it is just you need on a natural level to form this habit.
Yeah.
Of is that you think that's that's the help there?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. So today now it's nothing for me to walk by somebody who, let's say, I think, oh man, that was kind of weird, you know, and I'll say that to the Lord. I say, that was a little weird, wasn't it? You know. And
Jesus, did you think that was weird? I thought that was a little
weird. I thought it was weird. Yeah, I'm glad you didn't tell me to talk to him. But no, it's that type of thing. And then one of the other things that I did and still do to some degree is on these smartwatches that we have, set alarms throughout the day. And all it is just you can set it on vibrate. You don't have to tell the whole world your phone just went off, but you can vibrate as just a reminder that the Lord's here with you. And so I set things up in my life to help me to act like he is real. And I want to walk with him the way the disciples walk. And, you know, and I take some of the things that happen to me in my life and I do sort of a mental judo. And what I mean by that is that one of the things I have is I have tinnitus in my ear. There's a ringing in my ear for the last 5 years or so. And that can drive you nuts after a while if you have that. So what I did, I thought, how am I going to get over this? This is really annoying. Some people have it far worse than I do. I'm not really complaining about it. But I ended up saying, all right, let's do this. When I'm aware of it, I'm just going to take this as, Lord, you're calling me to listen to you in prayer, in your word. And I started to do that. And when this happens now, usually at the latter part of the day, it's exactly what I do. I start listening to what the Lord might be saying to me today, you know, in my life. So I use that in kind of judo.
That's a beautiful way to turn something into a grace.
It's turning a real pain into oh, that's right. Thank you, Lord. You know.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that that's happening to you, but I really love what you're doing.
You're not really sorry.
I mean, it's
are you really sorry?
A little bit.
On a natural level. I mean, but on a supernatural level, it's like sanctifying you. So yeah. I'm actually not sorry about that.
See? Are you sorry enough to give to my GoStartMe fund? Or
sure.
for some kind of cure?
Happy to give dollars.
He has tens of dollars in the bank.
Yeah.
No, that's an excellent question. I know as we're talking, I know there are millions of people that, boy, they'd like that kind of a relationship. Mm-hmm. They would. You got to work at it. If you were to ask me, what would you say to our listeners about how to develop this intimate relationship with your wife? It'd be the same thing. Mm. Number one. Act like she's real.
Right.
You know, stop everything in the headspace. You know, I'd go home after 4 days and I didn't say anything to my wife. And after 4 days, she'd say, okay, we need to talk. Sit down. Yeah? What? You haven't talked to me for 4 days. What's wrong?
What?
And I'd say, honey, there's nothing wrong. Hello, Archbishop.
Archbishop
How are you? She would say, I'd say, honey, there's nothing wrong. Well, you don't talk to me. Oh, I have been talking to you a lot in the last 4 days. I've been thinking so many things. She'd say, well, why don't you think them out loud? Oh, okay, I can do that. I just didn't know. I thought you knew that you're always in my mind.
That happens to me all the time. Yeah. That really does happen to me. Haley's like, hey, you want to talk? And it's like, oh, yeah. Sorry.
I guess we should do that.
Yeah.
That's what married couples do.
Yeah.
So I can say this. I got further down the road on my prayer 20 years ago, and I want it to be even more. It'd be nice to develop that relationship to the point when you die, it's like, oh, there you are.
There you are. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost as if, like, it's just not even hardly a transition. It's just a continuation of
the relationship.
Doing, yeah.
Yeah, respectful, you know.
Let me ask you this. If somebody isn't committed to a life of prayer, like, you know, setting aside X number of time.
Yeah. Keep going.
Okay, yeah. Adam's got to go do actual work.
Something I said?
At this conference. But, like, if you're not willing to set aside, you know, whatever it is, how much time every day, are you going to is pursuing this idea of like, oh, I'm going to be constantly thinking about Christ. Are you wasting your time if you're not even willing to pray first?
Well, that's another good question. I can tell you what I do, and I can tell you what Jesus does. I can tell you what the two of us do.
Okay, well, I like both of them. I like, this is a good start.
The scripture says that Jesus regularly went off to a place alone to pray, and especially at night, Catechism says. And so I think that starting your day off with some solid time with the Lord is the best thing possible to start off this relationship throughout the day. Because what he's going to give you in that morning prayer, I suggest morning, is what he's going to give you in Lectio Divina, this four-step way of praying and hearing the word of God for you today. That gives you more assurance that you can take what he gave you into the day, and he reminds you and so forth. So what I do every single day is I pray with my wife, and every day is almost identical. I get up at about 4:35, and I get up, I go downstairs, and I get some things ready and this and this and that, and then I make tea for my wife and myself. My wife will then come walking downstairs after I do, it'll be 20 minutes, half an hour after I do. She comes walking down the stairs. I have made her green tea, put it down. I put mine down, and we sit and we talk for about 5 minutes. You know how it is in the morning. You're tired. It's like, how are you? Good. Good morning.
Yeah. You sleep okay?
Yeah, you sleep okay. I don't know. I was asleep. So then I go over. I grab her Bible and my Bible. I set it down. And we look for the gospel of the day with the USCCB site. You look at the gospel of the day and the reading of the day. And then we do Lectio Divina together. We do it separately but together. And
so quietly, just at the same time?
We read it out loud,
okay,
like Lectio Divina.
Okay.
She reads hers, I read mine. And then we have a notebook. And then we spend that time going through and individually reading, meditating, praying, and contemplating. And then we start to share with each other what we got out of that. And this all started years ago with 10 minutes with each other every day.
Uh-huh.
And I was one of those guys that was like, I know I should do it. I know I should lead my wife in prayer. So it starts off with a Hail Mary, you know, and, uh-huh, and then it gets into 10 minutes. And it has grown and blossomed over the years. And now we spend every morning in prayer about an hour and a half,
uh-huh,
every single morning in
Beautiful.
Prayer. And this is the way we start our day. So when you start your day that way, it's hard to forget what you got out of it, you know. You have a gospel reading, and the Lord showed you this about yourself or what he wants you to do. And it's usually for me, or it's for somebody that I'm going to meet. So that is an excellent way to start, and that's the way Jesus did. And the reason I like it so much is the Catechism says, and I love this, the Catechism says that what Jesus said and did was the evidence of his prayer life. In other words, what he said and he did is, the Catechism says what he said and he did is the manifestation of what he prayed about.
Okay.
And so literally what he did during the day all had its roots in his time alone with the Father. Mm. He got his directions and things. And I have found at times in prayer in the morning that maybe I offended somebody and their face came up before me in prayer. And I thought, I got to check on that. Sure enough, I dissed someone and I didn't mean to, but here they are spazzing out about it and they're upset about it. And I don't even know.
Right.
But it was in prayer that their face came up. And so that's good. And my wife and I enjoy praying together and being together and reading scripture together so much in the morning that this might sound corny, but it's really true. There are times when we go to bed at night and she'll say, or I will say, I can't wait till morning to be with you in prayer.
Beautiful.
And I remember those nights that I thought to myself, this is the way it's supposed to be,
uh-huh,
where we're longing for the morning just so we can be in God's word together. You know, that was cool.
And what a sign pointing to heaven, right?
I mean, yeah.
That's, to me, that is the heavenly attitude of all desiring to be together.
Yeah.
And there you are. But the good thing about heaven is it's that you're satisfied in that desire,
yeah, yeah.
right?
Yep.
I mean, I think there's a lot of guys who are going to say, like, Jeff, that's great for you. Mm-hmm. An hour and a half in the morning, it's like, I just can't. There's no way I can do that.
Yeah.
So anything. I mean, like, 10 minutes. Like you said, you started off with 10 minutes.
Yeah.
In the morning. If that's all you can do, do it. I think you should probably look for ways to grow that 10 minutes. Don't.
Yeah.
Prayer, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's my experience is that prayer is not something to accomplish, but it's something to practice and grow in.
Right. And a lot of people look at it as something to accomplish. They'll say, I got to say my prayers. Wow, that sounds like quite a heavy weight.
Right.
You got to, poor you.
Yeah.
You got to be with God again?
Oh, dang.
Yeah, I'm going to be with God again today. I think people
it sounds like more like he has to be with you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah.
But when you look at prayer, people betray themselves in a way. Then they say, I really need to pray. I should pray. How's your prayer life? Well, it could be better. I don't know that. Sometimes people just do prayer, and prayer is prayer rather than a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't have a personal relationship with theology.
Right.
I got a personal relationship with a person. Mm-hmm. Theology tells me all about it, you know, and helps me clarify and so forth. And when someone says, well, can you come over tonight? We're going to go bowling, or we'll come over tonight and we're going to do this. And I say, I really got to be with my wife tonight.
Right.
You know, they'll say, oh, you poor guy. You know, yeah, I haven't been with her that much. I just really need about a half an hour with her.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
No, I can't. I got to be in the living room with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Gosh.
It's like, we got to put your
People
time
like,
in.
Man, that guy really hates his family life, you know.
Yeah, it's like, what a chore.
Yeah.
I would, but I'm behind on my time with Emily. I'm behind. I owe her at least 2 hours.
So, yeah, it's something that we should strive. I mean, if you can only do 10 minutes.
Start there.
Start at 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Don't not do 10 minutes.
Right.
Don't like think that, oh, I'm doing 10 minutes. I'm sat, you know, like.
Check that off.
Right. It's a box to check. You know, and the Lord, in my experience, will open up ways and actually plant the desire in you. If you're faithful to that 10 minutes,
yeah,
he will put the desire in you.
It's exactly right. It is. You're right. You're exactly right. It's when people ask me, well, how should I start? They say, I've never prayed with my wife. I've never led prayer or anything. I'm really uncomfortable about that, they'll say. So, fine. Go to this website. Get the two readings for the day. Give the first reading to your wife. You take the gospel reading. Get together with her. Say, honey, I really want to pray together. I want to read the Bible together. And she'll probably think, you? Okay. And don't let it discourage you. Get together and say, well, why don't we do this? You read yours. I'll read mine. And then we'll just close with an Our Father. Perfect. Do it. Do it for a week. Do it for a month. Do it for 6 months. You'll grow in it. Together.
You will naturally find things that, like, well, what if we do this?
Just start talking about other things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, just do it. You know, when I was a pastor for 12 years, we used to ask the women of our church, every year we did a survey. What do you want from your husband? Every year. The top two were always the same by spades. You know what they were? These are women. The husband thinks, oh, she's the spiritual one. I'm just, you know, I'm putting bacon on the table.
Yeah.
The number one thing that the women said across the board was, I want my husband to pray with me and to be involved in the spiritual things. That was number one. Number two, I want my husband to lead our children. Those were the two. Mm. And they never varied. They were always the two. So when I would tell
them. That's probably true across denominations. I suspect that that's universally the case.
Yeah. A woman wants to be led in that relationship with the Lord. Doesn't mean they can't lead things.
Sure.
They can lead.
Sure.
But she's saying, I want my husband to lead me in this. I want him to take responsibility. I feel secure.
They want their husband to be a man in the fullest sense.
Yeah.
Which is someone who does those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So they, when I tell the men, this is what your women are asking for. This is what your wives are asking for. And then they have to face the thing of, man, I just feel like I'm going to be a fake because she's so good at this. And I'm, it's, don't feel that way. You, her desire for you to do this is stronger than your fear. Just do it. Mm-hmm. You'll be shocked at how much she loves you and she affirms you.
Right.
You know, just do it. And if you think you're faking it, fake it. Just do it. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you don't know what to say, then say what you think one would say.
Yeah.
If, you know, they were, you know, like, well, I think someone might say this. So say it.
just say what David would say.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know what? I think that men in that situation will find, like, if you give this a try, you're going to find, like, your wife is, like, kind of a whole new woman.
She falls in love with you.
Exactly. It's like, oh, you'll be surprised how attractive you become to her all of a sudden.
Exactly. I got to tell you this. I am gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, doesn't help.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't hurt. That's
what
I meant to say.
We're kidding. We're kidding. Cavins is so arrogant. Uh-huh. No, you're right, though. A man becomes attractive when a man starts to love like Jesus. He's sweet. He's compassionate, merciful, kind, and leader. Mm-hmm. And that is what women are looking for.
Because there's nothing stronger than mercy. That is ultimate power.
Yep.
To bestow mercy on. It's like, oh, I could otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm so strong. I'm stronger even over my own desires. For, you know, like there is just nothing stronger than all those things that seem meek or like weak. Mm-hmm. No. Anybody can rage.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So.
Yeah, it takes a man to stand up in the midst of the adversity and to be merciful.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for spending this time with us. It's a blessing always to get to talk to you. So,
It's always good to be on your show. You guys do a great job, and always look forward to coming to Oklahoma.
Until next time.
Yep.